97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. If little Van Halen doesn't get you moving on a weekend, I don't know what will. Mark Cox here, along with my partner Bo Matthews and producer Carl Middleman.
Hi.
Here to inform you about what is going on out there that you can get involved in and in the great outdoors, because hunting season is upon us, my friend Bo.
I'll tell you, it's been busy. It has really been busy out there, and we're going to have a great conversation with a new guy from Drury Outdoors. Can't wait to talk to Jim Richmond in this program.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Did you go out hunting last weekend?
I did not. No, I didn't. I think my nephews did with my brother-in-law. I was not available to do that because it was homecoming weekend.
Oh.
And I had other
So he was cleaning his guns.
I was cleaning my gun at about that time. No, I'm just kidding there. Although I did joke with my daughter that I asked her if she had a preference of which one I was cleaning when the young man came over, and she said, "Dad, stop. Don't say that." So, yeah, that's kind of what I did.
Just a suggestion, Mark.
So, Big Fish, did you tear up when you saw your daughter dressed up for the homecoming?
So beautiful. Yeah, a little bit. She's growing up on me. Almost 16. She's going to be driving soon.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And later this month. Good guy. Did you vet the guy that took her out?
Yes. It seemed like a very nice young man. So
he knows police that can do background checks.
I'm telling you.
I did not. Although the thought crossed my mind. Yeah. I know when my wife is the daughter of a police officer, and I know growing up, that was certainly something that her dates were subjected to.
Dude, that's just smart.
Probably me. Mm-hmm. He probably checked my background, too, when he first met me, even though I was from out of state. So I don't know. I have a question. I heard a terrible rumor that you were, like, in prison this week. Was that what it was?
It was only for a few hours.
Oh, good. I'm so happy.
Thanks
so
for sending the bail money. No, I'm just kidding. I work with the Eureka Chamber of Commerce doing spotlight videos and podcasts and things like that for the businesses out there. And one of the members of the chamber is the Missouri Eastern Correctional Center on Route 66 there, right? In between Pacific and Eureka. And I got the email about a month ago saying, hey, this is where our next luncheon is going to be. And I was like, ooh, sign me up. I mean, I'm intrigued. And I watch The Last Castle and, the Alcatraz, all these prison movies. I'm intrigued by it. I don't want to be there, but I've never really been in a facility like that.
Orange is the New Black. You've been watching that?
Oh, yeah. I watch it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Mayor of Kingstown. Have you seen that series?
Yeah, sure.
So that's all loaded in my noggin. I've seen all these programs and everything. And we go in, and the warden, Gregory Hancock, first warden I've ever met, besides my wife, he kind of told us about, recidivism rate, I think is the word, offenders, leaving, and then some of them do come back, but they really work hard on getting them back out into society with skills, and it's really an interesting place. But my story for you that I really wanted to share was we got to actually tour and walk through the yard, if you will, where the offenders were, the inmates were just kind of walking around. And we were in closed groups of about 15 people. There was just a couple of us, a couple of groups. And we leave the welcome center or the visitor center, and we're walking across the yard. It was a beautiful day on Wednesday. And all of a sudden, I start hearing gunshots. And I'm like, something is going down right now. I'm looking around, and then it dawns on me, we are right across the street from St. Louis Skeeton Track.
I wondered if that's what it was.
But it took me a second to figure it out, because I thought, because you're walking in there, and you're like, you don't know what could happen.
He's thinking Shawshank Redemption. That's what he was worried about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly my point. what's the one with eating the eggs?
Cool Hand Luke.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Nice.
All that stuff. But anyway, the people that we met, the offenders that we met, you know, they served us food and stuff. They actually served Subway to us because they, and thanks to Subway for catering the thing, but it was really a neat experience. Again, what's the guy's name? Ken. Oh, here it is. Ken Korpecki, a former St. Louis County cop for many years. He's out there trying to help these guys get back into society. So they're doing really good work out there.
Yeah.
And but that when the gunshots went off, Mark, man, I should have had an adult diaper on.
Yeah, Bo's imagining himself held captive inside the prison walls.
I did
briefly. Yeah, I'm sure you did. Yep, we've all seen the movies.
Well, and we had both men and women on these tours too, and this is an all male facility. It's like,
I get it. You know the
anyway.
Other-
Let me just put a plug in there.
Yeah.
They are desperate for correctional officers. Like, they are down a lot. And if you're looking for a job, high school diploma, you know, got your wits about you, it could be a great career for some of you. So
good point.
Check them out.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, the other big story that happened this week, of course, that we can't not recognize what happened in Israel. These horrible terrorist attacks by Hamas. Israel's taking care of business. They're going to rid their country of this problem before this is over with, and I'm fully in support of that. But there was a report out this week, Bo, about the fact that at our southern border in the last year, there have been over 70,000 people cross the border who are considered to be of special interest. What that means is they come from countries where terrorism is a thing. So those are considered to be people of special interest. So the CPB that tries to do background checks, their home countries don't provide any information to the U.S., so you have no way of knowing if what they've been involved in over there unless they're on a terrorist watch list. They did find 150 of those this year. But 70,000 people have come in here from Yemen and Syria and places like that, where and Iran, where we know they foment terrorism. And Americans need to be aware. It's not about stoking fear, but right. here's the biggest number I heard and the scariest thing I heard out of what happened in Israel. As a percentage of the population, that there were over 1,200 Israeli deaths. Do you know what that would equate to in the United States? They referred to it as their 9/11. Do you know how many people would have to die in the United States to be the equivalent of the number who died in Israel last weekend? 40,000. Imagine 40,000 Americans being killed in one terrorist attack. That's the equivalent of what happened in Israel last weekend. That's why this is a huge deal. And there's no reason to think, with our open southern border, that the United States is not a ripe target for these militants, these radical terrorists of Hamas.
And there's a lot of talk about that, you know, certain people, even the United States, funding with the $6 billion that was given to Iran, that, you know, it somehow made it to Hamas and is funding that. So it is quite frightening, and we just need to be vigilant.
A friend
of mine is from Israel, and he is waiting for the call to be returned back home to fight. Look at how many people they had, like 300,000 of Israelites, you know, stepping up to fight for their country. That was amazing.
See the video of those paragliders dropping out of the sky?
I did.
I don't ever want to hear somebody say to me once again, why do you need an AR-15? That's why I need an AR-15.
Amen to that.
Thank you very much.
Amen.
We will continue to cover those stories here as well for you. Coming up, though, we're going to switch gears a little bit, move outdoors, talk about the fishing season. Yeah, it's largely over, but if you're a fisherman and you got a kid in high school, there's an event coming up you're going to want to know more about. We'll talk about it next on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Some of my fondest memories, both as a child and as an adult, were fishing with one of my uncles. The man just was the luckiest fisherman I've ever seen. So if you went with him, you kind of hoped that some of that rubbed off on you. And quite frankly, he taught me a lot over the years. I was never as good a fisherman as him, but I always loved it.
So if your name is nickname is Big Fish, what was his nickname?
The Mountain Man. He was the Mountain Man on the CB radio. Okay. So I was the Big Fish.
That's a good mentor in life, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
The Missouri Brush Control guest line is fired up, and we have Pat Bowden, Bowden and Rod McGrew from the American Bass Fishing Alliance, because they've got an event coming up that we want to definitely get the word out. Gentlemen, welcome to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, and this is the Great Outdoors portion of the show, by the way.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
So let's absolutely. Good to have you guys on. This is a group that you guys have, the American Bass Fishing Alliance. Tell me what your mission is.
Well, basically, our mission is to develop and engage, encourage, and educate our youth here, high school youth, in the multiple aspects of the fishing industry. That's our motto.
Yeah, I think it's great. And Rod, let me ask you this. I have two kids that went to Lafayette High School here in the greater St. Louis area. They have a friend who also went to Lafayette, I believe, who ended up doing some semi-pro fishing and was involved in that. But I don't think they had like a team from the high school. How do you get this message out to some of these schools that aren't involved? Because clearly you're trying to get more kids to realize what a great industry this can be, right?
Exactly. And again, this is Pat Bowden talking.
Okay.
And so I think I'll let Rod go ahead and fill us in on that one.
Okay. What we try to do is our main objective is the high school fishing teams. If somebody is not registered or doesn't have a high school fishing team, feel free to contact us. And if we have space available, we'll be glad to sign them up to attend the conference.
Well, with every big event, Pat, you know, you've done this. This is your third annual. What was the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway from last year to this year in running this event?
I think the biggest takeaway we had was the success that you saw on our young high school anglers' faces walking out the door and saying thank you so much for having this, having the high school coaches contact us and say, man, that was the greatest thing. We want to be there next year. And by doing that, it's just grown exponentially.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah,
It's a bi-state high school school bass fishing teams conference. So it's not a tournament, but it's more like a fishing show, like the public fishing show, but it's for the kids.
Well, what we have is we bring in a group of pro anglers, touring anglers. This year we'll have five touring pros that come in, and we'll rotate the kids through each speaker like they would a regular high school day. They'll rotate through their classes. We also have some vendors coming in that are on the electronics end for Garmin and Lowrance and Humminbird. They'll have classes for the coaches and the boat captains while the kids are rotating through their own classes. So
yeah,
it's set up pretty neat. And then, of course, the vendors that we bring in, we'll give the student anglers time to rotate through there and talk to them about their products as well. Yep.
Well, I mean, I wish it was something I'd had access to. I wish there was something like that when I was in school years ago. There may be people out there interested in that, so hopefully they'll reach out. We can give out contact information here, but just to let people know, the event is coming up Saturday, December 2nd at Vianney High School down there in Kirkwood off of South Lindbergh there, Kirkwood Road and 44. Now, you have limited availability, right? Only 200 slots, is that right?
Yeah, we have... right now, we have approximately 120 to 130 students signed up. So we have some room available. Some of the teams have more than 20 students, so they have them on a standby list. But yes, we have space available. And for information, they can get a hold of us at American Bass Fishing Alliance at gmail.com, and we can give them some additional information.
Yeah, is there a season? I mean, kind of for people who have never heard of this or they weren't aware of it because maybe their school doesn't have a team and they're brand new to it. Is it a like a weekly or a monthly competition? How is this set up?
The high school teams in Missouri have schedules that basically will have tournaments, probably five or six tournaments that run during the summer months.
Okay.
And they'll be competing against teams from St. Louis teams will be competing against teams from the Table Rock area, Lake of the Ozarks area, Kansas City area, basically across the state. And, you know, not necessarily any fantastic money prizes, but a lot of bragging rights for the students.
Oh, sure. Sure.
That's the best. got listed on your information for us that you'll have vendors out there. What other vendors besides Garmin will be on site?
Oh, we have plenty of other companies. What we tried to do was get the local flavor by having some local companies come in, like Denny Dennis, Sporting Goods, Dunn's Sporting Goods. And then we've got some bigger names, of course, that are backing this event, like Lou's and Strike King and Bass Pro Shop and Shimano will be there. But we've got some non-fishing industry partners as well. Some are real estate companies and some are just individuals that want to contribute to make this a success for these young anglers. But yeah, we've got a lot of companies coming in, probably close to 30 total vendors that'll be there that day. Jim Crowley is one of our speakers. Jim Crowley he has his own radio show called Jim Crowley Outdoors, and also Slickfish Radio. He's one of our guys that the kids really wanted to have back this year, so we're going to bring him back. As vendors, it's all primarily fishing industry related. And we, like I said, tried to keep it local so that the kids can speak to these guys and figure out, well, what kind of bait should I be using for right now or this coming spring? And these guys are there to help them even with that.
Yeah, I think I got a new idea there, Bo. How about Big Fish Radio? I could do that.
Love it. Love
that?
It.
Yeah, there yeah. That, yeah, I think. Just kidding. I'm not going to steal his idea.
You can create a podcast.
Don't worry. But Pat, maybe put in perspective for people how this industry has grown over the years. I mean, I remember growing up and watching TV shows with fishermen. I forget the names over the years.
Babe Winkleman.
That's one of them. I'm glad you thought of it. How has the industry changed? Because clearly it benefits the industry, as you mentioned, to garner more interest among our youth.
Absolutely. Rod and I have been both in the fishing industry as regional pro staff anglers. I've been in it for 23 years. Rod's been in it for about 30 years. And this all started a couple of years ago. We were fishing on Table Rock with a good friend and a Bass Elite pro angler by the name of Brian Snowden. And we were just talking a little bit about what's going on. And he asked us, well, what have you guys been up to? And Rod and I both had been going around doing onesie twosies with going in and visiting the clubs, the fishing teams that were on campus, wherever that may have been. And we'd go in and we'd give some seminars to them, just he and I. Well, Brian goes, well, have you ever thought about doing something a little bit bigger on a larger scale? And the light came on and Rod looked at me and I looked at Rod and on the way home from that day of fishing, we said, yeah, we think we could do this. Well, so that's exactly what happened. We formed an LLC and got this thing stood up, and then it kept growing to a size where we need to form a fully nonprofit organization, which is American Bass Fishing Alliance, and we're 501c3, tax exempt now, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
Just to handle the influx of people that are wanting to jump on board to help these high school students get that college scholarship or who knows, they may be one of the next people that walk across the stage at the Bassmaster Elite Series or something.
Wow. What a great story and how the genesis of it came to be. And here we are in the third year for you gentlemen. And, you know, the kids that were in it year one, year two, and maybe, you know, graduated and moved on, but how cool it must be to get together December 2nd and see these kids telling their own fish stories of their summer and what happened, you know, what they caught, how, and it's no different getting, you know, young people into something like this, getting away from the video games and screens, and they're doing something outdoors, they're breathing fresh air. There's so many positives to this. It's kind of like Mark and I have talked several times, and we've had them on, the young shooters, skeet shooting teams that
trap
are out
shooters,
there.
It's
very similar. Or it's like any VFW. They're just looking for new blood to come in. It's a good organization. We're doing good things. And I think it's word of mouth, and that's why we do this show, to spread that word. So we want to make sure the availability gets filled up for your 200 slots. Where can parents or even the students that are listening go to get this information and get signed up?
Well, basically what we need to do is have them reach out to us through American Bass Fishing Alliance at gmail.com. Our marketing director will handle all the incoming emails, and then he'll forward those to both Rod and I, and we'll basically send a packet out via email to those that are requesting on how they have to go through the registration process. Some of the young anglers don't have a high school team.
Right.
But there are other high school teams out there that are willing to take them on as one of their team anglers. And so we'll do a lot of behind-the-scenes things by hooking those people up directly with those coaches that are able to take on added anglers. So, yeah, they just need to reach out to us through American Bass Fishing Alliance at gmail.com.
Wow.
And like I said, our marketing director there, he will take care of everything and forward it. So we can get the information out.
Sounds like a good time. Again, Saturday, the 2nd of December over at Vianney High School. Go to the website to find out more details. Pat Bowden and Rod McGrew, thank you for your time and your efforts.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us on board, guys. Appreciate it, and appreciate everything you guys do on your radio program.
You bet. We'll talk again soon.
If I can inject one thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to invite you guys, if you'd be interested in coming out to the event and doing a little remote thing, we'd be happy to have you.
Well, a guy with a nickname Big Fish, he'd probably make that happen, couldn't he?
Well, that's what I think. Yeah, better to be a big fish than a little minnow.
That's so. Always been my argument. I just have to tell you. Thank you for the invite, guys. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
All right. Same here. Bye-bye.
Absolute. Big Fish TV. I can see it all. I've got a whole.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Got the
they will come
the
from
market.
The grave and be your special guest.
Yeah.
Pat Bowden and Rod McGrew, American Bass Fishing Alliance at gmail.com on our Missouri Brush Control guest line. That's really cool. Just, you know, encouraging young people to get into it. You know, you may not have an uncle that's into fishing like you had, or a grandfather or a dad like I did. I think it's a great opportunity.
My nephews are fruit for fishing. If it's a warm day and they don't have school, sometimes even after school, they're even fishing a little pond in their neighborhood. It's crazy.
Fake sick.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't know what you're talking about.
I'll have to tell my nephew about this. He'll love it. All right. Going from, you know, the fishing season's kind of coming to an end with the cooler weather. But hunting season is just ramping up right now. They just had the first weekend of gun deer season. The bow hunters are out there. We're going to talk to Jim Richmond from Drury Outdoors coming up on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away, drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame.
It's Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alongside Mark Cox, my name is Bo Matthews, our executive DJ and producer. Is Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
Great selection for this segment of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. This segment is actually brought to you by Razorback Armory and Deer Hunters. If you thought, oh, I only go shopping at the gun stores with lots of camo, Razorback Armory doesn't have a lot of camo gear. They've got some, a couple of things, but they are more about the weapon that you are going to use in the field when you are deer hunting. So check out RazorbackArmory.com. They're in DePere, just near 270 in Manchester. Can't beat it. On the Missouri Brush Control guest line, our guest, Jim Richmond, hence the song that was played at the beginning of this. Thank you, Carl. We finally have a replacement for Tim Chelsvik. Wow, we've been looking for a long time. He's the assistant editor at Drury Outdoors, based in Bloomsdale, Missouri, and living the dream. Welcome to the show for the very first time, Jim. How are you, sir?
Hey, it's awesome to be here. Thanks, guys.
You have a mission in your life, faith, family, and the outdoor lifestyle, and we've already begun antlerless deer. What's the report from Drury Outdoors on this that first weekend?
Well, it was really active, guys. I know for a fact that as I'm looking through the DeerCast app and seeing all of this stuff that's happened, we had our first really big cold front of the fall. And I know there was a lot of people participating in the antlerless season. My son and I did, and we were successful. I think we brought home four does this time. As far as that cold front goes, the bow hunters had a killer weekend. We saw a lot of really nice deer being harvested. So you kind of had to take your pick. You know, it was going to be either go out with the rifles and take care of some does on your property, or take the archery tackle out and see if you can get on that big buck you've been chasing.
Yeah. Yeah, true. So you took your son out for the firearm portion of it, which was new this year. People kind of had to make an adjustment for that, right?
Yeah. It felt weird at first, to be really honest with you. I've grown up in Missouri rifle hunting, and so to be walking around with a firearm this early in the season felt a little bit strange. But I tell you what, it was a great opportunity to get those kids out there and get them sharp for the youth season that's coming up soon.
Yeah, that's true. I know my nephews will be taking part in that as well. It is weird to have an opportunity for a gun season before youth gun season. Usually that kind of kicks it off, and then the adults get to go after that in November. So, we talked to Tim, obviously, over the years about DeerCast. Just to remind people, Jim, about that and what it can do for you as a hunter, because, you know, I'll wake up, well, I drive to work at 3 a.m. from my regular job here at the radio station, and there'll be some days when there are deer all over the place, like camped out on the side of the road as I'm driving in and running all over the place, and other days where I'll get up and it'll be a beautiful morning and I won't see a deer. DeerCast helps you, it helps tell you as a hunter the days when the deer are more likely to be active, correct?
Yeah, and, you know, Mark and Terry have, they've put together a ton of information over the last 20 years, and basically what they've done is they put that information into this algorithm in DeerCast, and if I remember correctly, it's like something like 13 data points or something like that that factors in things like moon phase, weather conditions, barometric pressure. All of those things are put together to forecast, even if it's going to be a nice morning, whether or not based on the phase of the year, whether or not it's going to be a good movement day. You also have to factor in that Mark and Terry are after the mature deer, the big deer, the deer that they've been watching for a while. And so these things are all put together in DeerCast so that it takes a lot of the guesswork. I remember as I was kind of developing as a deer hunter, as a young man, I was having to pull all kinds of different data from different places, all kinds of different websites and whatnot. But with DeerCast, I can use that and just flip it open on my phone and see, hey, you know, today's going to be a poor day. But I can also look at things like wind direction and go, well, even though DeerCast says poor, I can still look at the wind direction all in one place. And I can say, you know, I've got a really good stand for this wind direction. Like last night, for example, I went out and went into a spot that I knew the wind was going to be good. I saw some deer. I didn't see any of the deer that I was really chasing, but DeerCast really helps put all those pieces together so that you don't have to spend so much time in front of a computer screen determining whether or not today is going to be a good day.
Yeah, Jim Richmond, assistant editor at Drury Outdoors, is our guest on the Missouri Brush Control guest line. And question for you. So DeerCast, for those that are not familiar, that have never downloaded the app, it's not like a fish finder or like the Waze app where you can like locate, you know, you can pinpoint where the cops are or where the big fish are
who
knows what
point.
This technology
yeah.
can do?
Yeah.
So you don't have, users are not providing information to the app, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Now you can download. We have a social feed that you can upload, you know, your kill pictures to and things like that. And we love that. Part of my job is going through and finding those awesome posts that people put up in that feed, and we curate them and put them. Some of them go onto the feed, but no, we're not really. We might watch them. We might say, hey, you know, during this time of the year, we see a lot of pictures coming in. But most of the information that we're putting together is coming from our hunting team. It's coming from that historical data that we've seen through trail camera pictures and all that stuff. But it does also have a feature called maps. So we can, for example, let's say you put your camera out in July or August and you get a big deer on camera. On maps, you can place a waypoint, or you can mark a camera icon, and you can put in there, hey, I saw this big deer on this date under these conditions, and you can track that all season. That's really helpful, too.
I'll bet it is. Yeah, for sure. So, Jim, I know one thing that you do is you have your own TV channel on YouTube. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I have. I started my own. It's called Share the Wild with Jim Richmond, and it's a very, very new channel. So I put some hunts up there every once in a while. I went on a great turkey hunt last spring with some friends, and I try to document my trips and put them together by myself. I'm not the greatest video editor or videographer in the world, but I try to put something together that I can at least look back on and say, hey, you know, this was an awesome trip. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's fun, particularly to see people who have the you can downplay your ability to edit, but to have the technology to not only go into the woods and successfully hunt, but to record it at the same time. Because let me tell you, I'm not there. I struggle enough with the hunting side of it that worrying about getting video of it has never been part of my game plan.
Well, it's certainly a challenge. For some reason, deer hunting has become a bigger challenge with it than turkey hunting for me. I started using a hunting saddle this year, which is just another device that we use to get into places that we want to hunt that can't necessarily hang a stand, and started filming out of that this season. And that's been another, you know, just ratcheting up the challenge of it. I've gotten a lot of good footage so far this year, but like I said, none of it has been on the deer that I really want to get after. So it's hopefully coming up soon, we'll be able to do that too.
Jim, you know, the weather worked out. That was fantastic. And the excitement for deer hunting season is definitely there. But I've never heard the term hunting saddle. Please explain what that is.
Yeah. So the saddle hunting method has been around, I believe, since the 80s in small pockets across the country, especially in southeastern United States, where, you know, they hunt big pine forests. Basically everything you're hunting out of looks like a telephone pole, right?
Okay.
So essentially what they're doing, or what we're doing, is utilizing technology that arborists or electricians have used for a long time to scale power poles and trees. And so you're in
I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bulls pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away, drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame.
It's Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alongside Mark Cox, my name is Bo Matthews. Our executive DJ and producer is Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
Great selection for this segment of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. This segment is actually brought to you by Razorback Armory. And deer hunters, if you thought, oh, I only go shopping at the gun stores with lots of camo, Razorback Armory doesn't have a lot of camo gear. They've got some, a couple of things, but they are more about the weapon that you are going to use in the field when you are deer hunting. So check out RazorbackArmory.com. They're into pair just near 270 in Manchester. Can't beat it. On the Missouri Brush Control guest line, our guest, Jim Richmond, hence the song that was played at the beginning of this. Thank you, Carl. We finally have a replacement for Tim Chelsvik. Wow, we've been looking for a long time. He's the assistant editor at Drury Outdoors, based in Bloomsdale, Missouri, and living the dream. Welcome to the show for the very first time, Jim. How are you, sir?
Hey, it's awesome to be here. Thanks, guys.
You have a mission in your life, faith, family, and the outdoor lifestyle. And we've already begun antlerless deer. What's the report from Drury Outdoors on this first weekend?
Well, it was really active, guys. I know for a fact that as I'm looking through the DeerCast app and seeing all of this stuff that's happened, we had our first really big cold front of the fall. And I know there was a lot of people participating in the antlerless season. My son and I did, and we were successful. I think we brought home four does this time. As far as that cold front goes, the bow hunters had a killer weekend. We saw a lot of really nice deer being harvested. So you kind of had to take your pick. You know, it was going to be either go out with the rifles and take care of some does on your property, or take the archery tackle out and see if you can get on that big buck you've been chasing.
Yeah, yeah, true. So you took your son out for the firearm portion of it, which was new this year. People kind of had to make an adjustment for that, right?
Yeah, yeah. It felt weird at first, to be really honest with you. I've grown up in Missouri rifle hunting, and so to be walking around with a firearm this early in the season felt a little bit strange. But I tell you what, it was a great opportunity to get those kids out there and get them sharp for the youth season that's coming up soon.
Yeah, that's true. I know my nephews will be taking part in that as well. It is weird to have an opportunity for a gun season before youth gun season. Usually that kind of kicks it off, and then the adults get to go after that in November. So, we talked to Tim, obviously, over the years about DeerCast. Just to remind people, Jim, about that and what it can do for you as a hunter, because, you know, I'll wake up, well, I drive to work at 3 a.m. for my regular job here at the radio station, and there'll be some days when there are deer all over the place, like camped out on the side of the road as I'm driving in and running all over the place, and other days where I'll get up and it'll be a beautiful morning and I won't see a deer. DeerCast helps you. It helps tell you as a hunter the days when the deer are more likely to be active, correct?
Yeah, and, you know, Mark and Terry have they've put together a ton of information over the last 20 years. And basically what they've done is they put that information into this algorithm in DeerCast. And if I remember correctly, it's like something like 13 data points or something like that that factors in things like moon phase, weather conditions, barometric pressure. All of those things are put together to forecast, even if it's going to be a nice morning, whether or not based on the phase of the year, whether or not it's going to be a good movement day. You also have to factor in that Mark and Terry are after the mature deer, the big deer, the deer that they've been watching for a while. And so these things are all put together in DeerCast so that it takes a lot of the guesswork. I remember as I was kind of developing as a deer hunter, as a young man, I was having to pull all kinds of different data from different places, all kinds of different websites and whatnot. But with DeerCast, I can use that and just flip it open on my phone and see, hey, you know, today's going to be a poor day. But I can also look at things like wind direction and go, well, even though DeerCast says poor, I can still look at the wind direction all in one place. And I can say, you know, I've got a really good stand for this wind direction. Like last night, for example, I went out and went into a spot that I knew the wind was going to be good. I saw some deer. I didn't see any of the deer that I was really chasing, but DeerCast really helps put all those pieces together so that you don't have to spend so much time in front of a computer screen determining whether or not today is going to be a good day.
Yeah, Jim Richmond, assistant editor at Drury Outdoors, is our guest on the Missouri Brush Control guest line. And question for you. So DeerCast, for those that are not familiar, that have never downloaded the app, it's not like a fish finder or like the Waze app where you can like locate, you know, you can pinpoint where the cops are or where the big fish are who knows what this technology can do. So you don't have, users are not providing information to the app, correct?
Correct. Yeah. You can download, we have a social feed that you can upload, you know, your kill pictures to and things like that. And we love that. Part of my job is going through and finding those awesome posts that people put up in that feed. And we curate them and put them, some of them go onto the feed, but no, we're not really, we might watch them. We might say, hey, you know, during this time of the year, we see a lot of pictures coming in, but most of the information that we're putting together is coming from our hunting team. It's coming from that historical data that we've seen through trail camera pictures and all that stuff. But it does also have a feature called maps. So we can, for example, let's say you put your camera out in July or August and you get a big deer on camera. On maps, you can place a waypoint or you can mark a camera icon and you can put in there, hey, I saw this big deer on this date under these conditions, and you can track that all season. That's really helpful, too.
I'll bet it is. Yeah, for sure. So, Jim, I know one thing that you do is you have your own TV channel on YouTube. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I have. I started my own. It's called Share the Wild with Jim Richmond, and it's a very, very new channel. So I put some hunts up there every once in a while. I went on a great turkey hunt last spring with some friends, and I try to document my trips and put them together by myself. I'm not the greatest video editor or videographer in the world, but I try to put something together that I can at least look back on and say, hey, you know, this was an awesome trip. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's fun, particularly to see people who have the you can downplay your ability to edit, but to have the technology to not only go into the woods and successfully hunt, but to record it at the same time. Because let me tell you, I'm not there. I struggle enough with the hunting side of it that worrying about getting video of it has never been part of my game plan.
Well, it's certainly a challenge. For some reason, deer hunting has become a bigger challenge with it than turkey hunting for me. I started using a hunting saddle this year, which is just another device that we use to get into places that we want to hunt that can't necessarily hang a stand, and started filming out of that this season. And that's been another, you know, just ratcheting up the challenge of it. I've gotten a lot of good footage so far this year, but like I said, none of it has been on the deer that I really want to get after. So it's hopefully coming up soon, we'll be able to do that too.
Jim, you know, the weather worked out. That was fantastic. And the excitement for deer hunting season is definitely there. But I've never heard the term hunting saddle. Please explain what that is.
Yeah. So the saddle hunting method has been around, I believe, since the 80s in small pockets across the country, especially in southeastern United States, where, you know, they hunt big pine forests. Basically everything you're hunting out of looks like a telephone pole, right?
Okay.
So essentially what they're doing, or what we're doing, is utilizing technology that arborists or electricians have used for a long time to scale power poles and trees. And so you're in it's basically a sling that you sit in, and then it also has some tethering. So you have like a lineman's rope that goes around the tree, and then you have a tether that you can sit in to support your weight up in the tree. It's just another really mobile way to get into places. For example, a public land deer hunter, because of laws, they go into places where they can't necessarily, you know, put tree steps into a tree or screw anything into a tree to damage a tree, anything like that. Well, we have the means through a saddle to be able to hike in a long way under, you know, extremely light, ultralight hunting is what a lot of people call it, and get into places that a lot of people can't go with a heavy climbing stand or ladder stand or something like that. It's just another really mobile and really, it opens new access to places that a lot of people haven't been able to get into without saddles.
So I'm picturing a hammock. It goes between two trees. Is that right?
No. So you're attached to one tree. So in other words, you sit facing the tree very closely.
Okay.
And you sit in this saddle. My my daughter likes to call it my diaper stand.
Okay. Now I picture it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you sit in it, you support your weight in it. You have either you can stand on your steps or your platform, and you kind of lean back into it. It supports the weight away from the tree. It's really good for like a two-man set. So if someone's trying to film, in other words, if you've got a hunter that's on a platform stand or hunting out of a saddle themselves, as a cameraman, you can get into that saddle and you have full mobility almost 180 degrees around that tree. You can swing around and do whatever you need to. In fact, last night on my hunt that I was hunting out of a saddle, I was able to, I had a little buck come in. I actually rattled him in. He came in within about 5 yards of me, and I was able to shift myself around the tree to be able to get footage of him I didn't want to take him, so I want to just get camera footage of him, and that's what I was able to do. So the mobility factor goes way up with the saddle.
Yeah.
I'm looking at pictures online as you're talking. I'm like, yeah, it looks like a diaper, so your daughter's right. And it's comfortable. I mean, you can be up there for quite a while.
Yeah, a lot of guys. I haven't tried it yet myself, but a lot of guys will do an all-day sit in November, you know, late October, November for the rut.
Dang.
They'll do an all-day sit in a saddle. Now, it does take some adjustment and some getting used to, and certain brands of saddles are a little more comfortable than others. And I know, actually, I just put an article about this up on DeerCast. You can just search my name on DeerCast, and it should pull it up about, you know, if a saddle is right for you. Now, because saddle hunting has been so popular, now there are all kinds of iterations of different saddles, style-wise. You mentioned a hammock. I know there's one out there I saw the other day that literally looks like a hammock that you just sit in and kind of swing around in the tree.
So yeah, most of them are like a couple $100.
Yeah, you know? I have a dumb question because I have found myself with the ability to doze off in single-digit temperatures in a tree stand while waiting for a deer. What would happen if you fell asleep in the saddle?
I know my legs would fall asleep.
I would not be afraid of that at all.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I feel safer, honestly. I feel safer in a saddle because I have multiple points of contact.
Okay,
Rather than putting my trust in a platform stand, I had a good friend of mine that his stand actually gave out from under him one year when he was installing them. And so, and he actually damaged his back pretty badly, and he hunts out of a sort of a I don't know. It's a saddle, but it's like a hybrid saddle that he can just sit down in, and it supports him really well, and he loves it.
Wow, maybe that's the new trend. I'm sure you can see one of those on Grace in the Wild TV on YouTube, right?
On Grace in the Wild, I haven't put anything up there yet. That's actually my family's channel that we do a lot and have a lot of fun with. You can see some great recipes. I haven't put a lot of deer hunts on there or anything because of YouTube, you know, kind of throttling hunts and whatnot.
But
we have to be careful about that. But that's a really fun channel that my family and I put together several years ago. We put a lot of recipes and, you know, just adventures that we do, going out mushroom hunting and things like that. My son actually has a couple hunts up on there that have been a lot of fun as well.
Oh, I'll bet. So what are you looking forward to the most? What's your favorite season? Is it turkey or deer? Am I assuming it's deer?
Well, you know, I'm an avid turkey hunter. Okay. I love spring turkey hunting. I don't do much fall turkey hunting because I love to bow hunt for big whitetails. But I will say this, my favorite time of the year is coming up here in about 2 weeks. It's what we call pre-lock on DeerCast. It's basically phase four is what we call it. It's the time when we can rattle and grunt. We start seeing a lot of chasing and things like that. That's my favorite time of year. I love being out with my bow during that time of year.
That's great. Okay, faith, family, and the outdoor lifestyle. Boy, hunting is a great way to share great Bible scriptures with your family. And with being a father of three, I'm sure that's implemented an easy way when you're out there doing that. Grace in the Wild TV is the YouTube channel. Jim Richmond, we can tell Tim Chelsvik, he has been replaced with a better guy. No, I'm just kidding. No, tell Tim we said hello and congratulations on his move. But thank you so much for joining us on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Hey, thank you, guys. You have a good deer season. Stay safe and shoot straight.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Amen. Absolutely. Still working out of my, I guess I'll have to get a saddle placed down there on the Bo Matthews estate for that big buck he showed me a picture
you
of.
You say this every week, and he shoots you down.
He keeps shooting me down because his wife's like feeding the darn thing or something.
Well, hey, hold on. We're a sanctuary. Let's call it that.
Okay. You've got a sanctuary city down there in the Bo Matthews estate.
No, don't say that.
No,
not that kind of,
you don't like that.
Wow. No, but did you pull up Google images of the hunting saddle?
I did not.
Have you seen
it? I did not. I'm envisioning what it would look like, which is why I was a little afraid if I fell asleep, I'd fall over.
Yeah, like I said, I know my legs would fall asleep for sure, but no, it's kind of cool looking, actually.
Some of my best memories sitting in a tree stand, I've got some pictures of this somewhere on my phone. It's, you know, 12 degrees outside. There's a double tree stand. I used to take my son every year until he started hunting on his own. And inevitably, at some point in the morning, he's all fired up to get out there. It's cold. We climb up in the tree stand. We get all settled in. And suddenly I feel his head over on my shoulder and he's falling asleep.
Boom. Like a light.
Just out like a light. Yep. Just fantastic. And, you know, I'd let him sleep and keep my eye out in case I saw something. Just great memories. Good time of year to build more of those. And thrilled we could get Jim on here to talk about it. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
Have a great rest of your weekend. See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.